All right, we have now on the line Cindy Sheehan, mother and anti-war activist. Hi, Cindy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, how are you?
Very good. Thanks very much for joining us today.
It's a great honor to have you on the show.
Oh,
and,
thank you.
I think we could maybe just start by you could tell us how it is that you got involved with anti-war sort of activism. And as far as I know, it a lot of it kind of started with a visit to the White House, did it not?
Well, actually, my anti-war activism started when my son was killed in Iraq on April 4th, 2004. And we knew that the war was immoral and illegal before he went over there, but we didn't do anything to try and stop it. And actually, I didn't visit with George Bush in the White House. I visited with him at that Fort Lewis, Washington State. So we visited with him about 2 months after Casey was killed, and that didn't start our activism, but it just made us more determined to stop him and end the war.
So ahead of time, you were already researching the war and aware of what it was all about? And
we had already started to do interviews. I hadn't had any speaking engagements yet. That didn't start till July 4th, 2004, was my first public speaking engagement in Berkeley, California, and I really haven't stopped since then.
Cindy, did your son's Casey?
Yes.
Did he know... Did he feel that the war was illegal or immoral?
Yes, he did. He thought that the war was wrong and that the president was using his troops in a very reckless way and an ignorant way. And knowing that, you know, I begged him not to go. I told him we would, you know, take him up, sneak him up to Canada or break his legs or whatever. And he just said, "Mom, I got to go. It's my duty. My buddies are going." So he went, and 5 days after he got to Iraq, he was killed in combat. And that's another thing. His recruiter, when he was recruited in May of 2000, his recruiter promised him that even if there was a war, he wouldn't see combat because he scored so high on the military competency test. And recruiters are still promising our loved ones that. They're still promising them that if they enlist, that they won't even have to go to Iraq. And, you know, they always do.
We heard yesterday when we interviewed Michelle Robidoux that there's even recruiters now are deserting from from the American Army.
And so what was your experience when you did end up meeting Bush?
It was pretty awful. You know, he was supposed to, like, you know, try to extend his condolences and you know, talk to us about our loss and everything, but we felt worse when we left the meeting because he was acting like it was a tea party that we were at. You know, he walked in and the first thing he said was, so who are we honoring here? He didn't even know Casey's name. He didn't know our name. He didn't know it was my son. You know, he just was very disrespectful, very inappropriate, and he can't comfort anybody because he doesn't have any comfort inside of him. He has no idea what it means to be a human being. He doesn't have any idea what it means to have a loss like this and be brokenhearted, you know, because I don't really think he has that much of a heart.
How many people were being honored at that time, at that event? Or
I think there was about 15 or 16 families there. But he met with each family individually.
So he kept you all separated?
Yes, we were separated. I think they found out that worked better because if they had the meetings together, the families would kind of gang up on him.
And he had kind of a bit of a strange interaction with your daughter or with something that your daughter said?
Oh, yeah. He came up to... And the article that was written about the meeting... by Greg Szymanski. I kind of got the gist of it, but he kind of got some things mixed up. I don't blame him because I was walking through downtown Washington, D.C. when we were doing the interview. But George Bush came up to my daughter, and he shook his hand her hand, and he goes, "So who are you to the lived one?" And Carly goes, "Well, he was my brother." And George Bush goes, "Well, I wish I could bring your lived one back to fill the hole in your heart." And Carly goes, yeah, so do we. And he goes, yeah, I'm sure you do. And he gave her a dirty look and turned his back on her and didn't have anything to do with her for the rest of the meeting.
Wow.
Wow.
I know. He came up to me one time and he goes, Mom, and he called me Mom through the whole time, which I thought was disrespectful. I wanted to say, what idiot? But he called me Mom and he goes, I can't imagine losing a loved one, whether it be a mom or dad or aunt or uncle. And I went, hold on a second. I said, it was my son. My son was killed in Iraq. And I said, I think you can imagine it. I said, try and imagine if one of your daughters was killed. And he kind of got a flicker of humanity in his eye that went away really quick. And I just said, trust me, you don't want to go there. And he goes, you're right, I don't. And so I just said, well, thank you for putting me there.
Thank you for what?
For putting me there.
Sheesh.
How long did the meeting last? How long was he there?
We were probably with him about 10 minutes, 12 minutes at the most, not that long. But like I said, we just left feeling just so much worse. And it was just so bizarre. It took me about a year to process the entire thing and be able to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because it's just very confusing when you're looking into somebody's eyes and their mouth say one thing, but their eyes say another thing.
Yeah.
You know, what they're saying from their mouth it's not coming from their heart and getting to their eyes. So, you know, and it's really disturbing to think that our president, you know, who is supposedly they call him the leader of the free world, he can't even pretend to be a human being. You know, most sociopaths can pretend to be a human when they have to, but he couldn't. He had no idea how to comfort a family who was going through the devastation that we were going through.
Wow. And so what has been sort of your subsequent experiences with other people in America or other media? Have you received a lot of support, or what do you feel like is the current climate right now?
We get a lot of support from the American public. I get a couple hundred, sometimes up to 500 emails a day.
Wow.
And most of them are very supportive. I would say it depends on what I do, but like probably 1 in 100 emails I get are hate mails and very disrespectful, you know, calling me terrible names that these people should have their mouths washed out with soap, but also calling me things like a traitor and a terrorist, and I support terrorism and I don't support the troops and things like this. And these people just don't realize how hypocritical that sounds.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if they're telling me that I can't speak out against the president or the government, that's being a traitor, because it's our right as American to do this, and it's our responsibility also. You know, and if they're telling me I don't support the troops by what I'm doing because I want them to come home alive, you know, their own government doesn't support the troops. They still don't have armored Humvees. They still don't have enough food and water. A lot of times they have to eat rotten food because the security situation is so bad, the food can't get to the troops in time, so they have to eat it rotten. You know, they're still not with the proper body armor. They don't have the right training. You know, they're being trained in open desert combat, and they're being killed in urban guerrilla conflict like my son was. And they're being forced to stay over there past their time, past their enlistment time. And when they come home wounded physically or mentally, then they can't get the treatment they need because the government's cutting back on our Veterans Administration system. You know, so it's just people who still support, you know, this occupation and support the mission of the president, they just can't see how hypocritical it is.
Right.
You know, not only that, but, you know, we're over there killing innocent people and destroying a country that was no threat to the United States of America. It's not moral and it's not legal.
Have you found that when in talking to people about this, have you talked to anybody that, you know, believed in the war beforehand and now sort of is starting to change their view on it? Or do you see happening?
Oh, yeah. I've talked to a lot of people like that. The most, I guess the most, relevant one would be Representative Walter Jones from North Carolina, who was a huge supporter of the president in the war. You know, he was the one that even changed the names of French fries to Freedom Fries. And now he realizes that he was lied to and he was duped. And he feels so much remorse for the devastation that's been caused by the lies and by him supporting the lies. And there's a lot of people in our organization, Gold Star Families for Peace, that supported it beforehand. But before their child was killed or after their child was killed, they realized that their child was killed for lies or betrayals. And it's kind of the country, I think our country is turning around because the poll numbers, you know, show that almost 60% of Americans favor withdrawal of our troops from Iraq. But I would say that would probably have been reversed before the invasion, at least.
Yeah.
That, you know, people supported the invasion, but now they're supporting the withdrawal of the troops because they see that it's based on lies. And I just see the people hanging on to their beliefs and to supporting the president. I think they're doing it out of self-preservation because they don't want to realize that their support of lies and betrayals have caused so much death and destruction. But all I can say to them is, you know what, we can't go back in the past. All we can do is live today and try to change the future. And there's millions of people in harm's way for the lies, and we just have to realize what a huge mistake it was and then work to correct it.
I think as well that a lot of people who have had, I hate to say loved ones, but because of the president's use of the term, but
he wouldn't even say my son's name, and he wouldn't look at the pictures we brought of him. He would only say loved one. He wouldn't say your son, your daughter, or your brother, or your sister. It was just loved one because he wanted to make it so impersonal to himself.
Yeah, and probably because he hadn't taken the time to do any sort of investigating who was this person or any of that.
Right. Well, nobody told him about it, and I think he just didn't want to know anything about the person that his policies killed.
I'd imagine as well that a lot of the people in the states that have lost family members or friends to the war, it's probably very difficult for them to accept that the war is a pointless war and that it's illegal and immoral, because it, you know, that they might feel as well that the death was a pointless death as well. So
it would be in vain, a death in vain.
Yeah. So I think
that's what, you know, and that's why the parents and husbands and wives of people who have been killed still support it, because they don't want to think that their child or family member, like you said, died in vain. But, you know, that's one thing about Gold Star Families for Peace. We realize that, and we don't want our child to have died in vain. So that's why we're working to make this for peace and for love and not war and hatred.
And also, I mean, the more that this kind of these families who have lost people over there support the war, the more other people, of course, are gonna perish over there as well.
Exactly, and that's what George Bush, one of his rationalizations for staying there, is to honor the sacrifices of the ones who have been killed and to honor their families. And you know what my thing is? Why would I want another mother, American or Iraqi, to go through what I'm going through because of his failed policies? You know, I wouldn't want my worst enemy to go through what I have to go through every day. Why would I want another mother, who just, you know, gave birth to their child and loved their child and raised them to be a wonderful person? Why would I want another mother to go through the devastation I'm going through? And so I say, don't use my son's name and don't use my name to continue your killing.
How do you feel that your story and the story of the other families has been treated in the mainstream media?
It's been not very put out there very much in the mainstream media. Whenever I have been on I've done a lot of network news stories and stuff like that, but they always put you on with somebody who still supports the president and still supports the war. And I've done a lot of cable news, you know, like MSNBC and CNN. And they always put me with somebody who still supports the president and supports the war. And you know, and I tell them, I said, I don't think this is right. Number one, you shouldn't be exploiting our losses for ratings, you know. And number two, your whole media, your whole programming is pro-war. So why can't you just have a peace person on without having to have somebody on to balance out your coverage? Because your coverage is very unbalanced anyway. Mm. And so, it's, you know, if I didn't go on with those other people, the peace message would not get out at all.
Right. I also wanted to just move on to perhaps, a very much related subject, but I've heard that you're quite active around the Downing Street memo and getting publicity for that. Mm-hmm. Could you tell me about that?
Yeah, my organization, Gold Star Families for Peace, was one of the first organizations that was a supporter of the AfterDowningStreet.org. And we just want, you know, if your listeners don't know what the Downing Street memo was, it was a minutes of a secret meeting between Tony Blair and British intelligence agents that had just gotten back from Washington, D.C. And the agent said that, you know, America is going to invade Iraq, and they want to use the justification of weapons of mass destruction and terrorism, and the intelligence needs to be fixed around the policy. And that was July 23rd of 2002. And so what I'm seeing and what it makes me feel is that my son's death was premeditated, that there's tens of thousands of people dead because of premeditated and prefabricated intelligence and policies to go to war. And to me, that is treason, that our government has committed treason, and people in the highest levels of our government have committed treason. So I testified for the John Conyers hearing in Washington, D.C. on June 16th, and on July 23rd, which would be the third anniversary of the meeting on Downing Street, there's going to be like regional parties, not parties, but events all over the country to bring attention to the Downing Street memos, which I think have gotten terrible coverage in the mainstream media. If it wasn't for the internet and downingstreet.org, you know, they would be history by now, and nobody would know about them. So and also on August 8th, there's going to be a hearing in England that John Conyers and myself and a couple of other people are going to go and keep it alive over there.
Do you have any plans to, you talk about treason, and certainly uh-huh. I've also heard the term high crimes and misdemeanors.
Uh-huh.
Does Gold Star Families for Peace or yourself personally have any hopes or plans to impeach this guy?
Personally, I am doing it to call attention to the lies and the betrayals that got us into the invasion and occupation of Iraq. That's what I am in it for. But, you know, if this causes him to be impeached and then tried for war crimes, you know, there's not going to be any skin off my teeth. You know, that would make me happy. But if the Downing Street memos are true, clearly and without a doubt, this man and his administration has committed treason and high crimes and misdemeanors, and it's clearly an impeachable offense. I mean, it's in the Constitution. So what we have to do and what Gold Star Families is doing is lobbying Congress to have an investigation into the memos, which is called a resolution of inquiry, and that's the first step to voting for articles of impeachment. And we, you know, have are holding out a little hope because, you know, Congress is Republican, but we just go, and I just tell them, you know what, it doesn't matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat. This is a nonpartisan issue, you know, and you didn't hold up your right hand and put your left hand on the Bible and swear allegiance to the president or to the Republican Party. You swore allegiance to the Constitution of the United States.
Right. Right on.
And I expect you to do your constitutional duty, because there's so many people, my son included, dead for nothing. They're dead because of the lies and betrayals. You know, you found it in your... Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
We're here.
Okay, you found it in your budget and in your worth your time to investigate Bill Clinton for lying about a consensual adult sexual affair, but you can't find it in your time and your budget and in your consciences and souls to investigate George Bush for the lies that he... And you know what? So let's investigate it. And if they prove to be false, great. You know, then they don't have anything to hide if they didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah. I think what you're saying was quite a good point as well, that it is evidence of premeditation, because in our other interview with Michelle Robidoux, she was saying that with the cases of soldiers that are coming to Canada and that are trying to stay here, they've made some kind of a ruling that they're actually not allowed to talk about the legality of the war within their cases and within the ruling of whether they can stay here or not. So they've had to find other ways of talking about what happened in the war. So they've gone on to talk about, for example, war crimes and the fact that war crimes, that they would have to be committing war crimes if they went to war, and they had people testifying and things. So that's another good point, is that the Downing Street memo can also be a defense for people wanting to stay in Canada, for example, which shows premeditation, right?
Right, and before the Downing Street memos came out, Pablo Paredes, a seaman in San Diego, California, was tried, and he actually got to bring in the illegality of the war, and he wasn't found innocent, but he just got a slap in the wrist sentence. So, you know, I think the judge advocate general who tried that case really opened it up so they can start talking about the illegality of the war. And really, you don't have to obey illegal orders, you know, and if the war is proven to be illegal, then you don't have to fight in it, because that would be obeying an illegal order, and you could be tried for war crimes.
Yeah, which we saw happen in Nazi Germany.
You can't use the Nuremberg defense that I was only following orders if you know that they're illegal.
Right. Well, just for our listeners then, as we sort of wrap up here, could you give the contact information or the website for the Gold Star Families for Peace if people want more information on what you're doing?
Yes, our website is G as in gold, S as in star, F as in family, P as in peace.org. That's GSFP.org. I would also urge your listeners to go to afterdowningstreet.org and find out more about the Downing Street Minutes. And another thing that the Minutes bring out is that England and America were bombing Iraq before George Bush got permission from Congress to invade. They were trying to provoke Saddam, and they were also trying to soften up the targets for the invasion. So that's also treason, you know, clearly treason. So we really need to keep this going and hold our leaders accountable, you know, not only American leaders, but the British leaders, too.
Hear, hear. What is the Downing Street website again, if you can give that one more time?
It's just one word, afterdowningstreet.org.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being with us, Cindy, and shedding some more light on the whole subject.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me. Anytime.
All right.
And if for ever any reason you ever do need to come up to Canada, you are more than welcome, particularly in British Columbia, it seems.
For speaking engagements and whatever.
Or to live.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Good luck. So once again, that was Cindy Sheehan, a mother and anti-war activist involved with a group called Gold Star Families for Peace. You can find out more about them at GSFP, which is the initials of Gold Star Families Peace. GSFP.org. And also she's inviting people to check out afterdowningstreet.org. Her son Casey was killed in Iraq 5 days after he got there, even though he knew it was an illegal and pointless and immoral war, and even though his family did. And you heard his mom say, like, hey, don't go. I mean, this is the kind of thing that is happening in the States right now, where,
so
where families are saying to their loved ones, you know, don't go. We'll, she said, we'll go to Canada. We'll break your legs. You know, we'll find a way to get you out of it.
Yeah, it's very sad, man.